excavate, in a way, what these films are really about, and that's the moment in which they're made, I suppose. Miguel, tell us about the sound world of Forbidden Planet.
So you mentioned it was a husband and wife team, Louis and Bebe Baron, that composed that in 1956, and they were experimenting with music technology. So they were working with oscillators and circuits and so on. They were working in New York. They did a bit of work with John Cage, and they sweet-talked a producer into sort of letting them do the music for this film, Forbidden Planet.
So they're using electronic devices then that would have been, I mean, not designed for making music.
No, they literally made their own circuits, which they amplified, and they would sort of send them into their own kind of loop. So these circuits would sort of all interact with each other and eventually overload and blow up and die, and they would record all of that sound. In fact, one of the really iconic moments from the film Forbidden Planet is the sound of one of the circuits dying. It's literally overloading and exploding.
The film is set on a planet where a spaceship lands. It's a version of The Tempest, isn't it? And a mission comes to find out what's happened to this expedition. And there is a sort of alien world of the planet, isn't there? But there's also the human technological world, the laboratory of Morbius, who is the Prospero character. What we hear when we go down into his laboratory is incredibly strange and discordant, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And one of the things about the music for this film is that no one called it music. And if you look at the opening titles for it, it doesn't say original music or electronic music. It says electronic tonalities. And the studio were worried that the musicians' union might have some issue with the idea that this music was created without using real performers. So I think there's a sense of it was really new. No one really knew even what to call it or whether it was music.
How does it sound to our ears now, Anna? Because in 1956, it was meant to express something of the future. Does it still do that, even though now it has a kind of historical vibe to it, because we associate it with this analogue way of making music?
I think now, to us, it sounds like a dated idea of what the future was meant to sound like. I mean, I think you almost, there's almost like a parody. It's impossible to hear some of these sounds now, even in concert music written of the time, without being able to date them back to the 60s and 70s. And and that's made a feature of in films like Mars Attacks. You have, you know, the these sounds are almost impossible to remove from the idea of sort of space cliche now. And so I think you'd have to be very careful how you use them today to hint the future. I think in a way it almost says more about the past than the future now.
Had electronic music colonized space by the 50s and 60s? I mean, Anna mentioned the theremin, which is, you know, tell us about the theremin, Miguel, because this seems to me to be the key instrument, science fiction instrument of this period.
Yes, it became used a lot in sort of 50s sci-fi. I think its most prominent first use in a sci-fi film is a Bernard Herrmann score for The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is 1951-ish, I think.
And what is a theremin?
So it's an electronic instrument, and it's actually the result of... It was made by a Russian, Leon Theremin in the West, he was known. And it was a result of a government experiment into proximity sensors. So you have sort of two antennae, and they create a sort of electromagnetic field around them. And as you move your hand into the electromagnetic field, one controls pitch and the other controls volume. So if you see someone playing it, they look a bit like a puppet. They're doing this kind of movement.
And what does it sound like? Can we do an impression?
It's a pure sine wave, theoretically. So it sounds sort of kind of noise. Was that all right?
It was
great.
There you are, yes. Go on. Let's have a round of applause.
Thank
for that.
You. Yeah. If you know the Beach Boys song Good Vibrations, it's a theremin in that. That's the weird sort of noise in that. And it became, you know, absolutely a cliche for the alien other, as it was used in that Bernard Herrmann score. Curiously, though, that it's not the first use of the theremin. It was used throughout the 1940s, most famously in Miklos Rozsa's score for Spellbound, where it's really associated then with psychological...
The Hitchcock film,
yeah. And it's associated with psychological trauma. So actually Herman's use of it sort of started this 1950s trend of representing aliens through this kind of instrument.
Okay, well, I want to talk now about a film that combines both of these approaches, the music of the past and a music that tries to grasp the coming future. Andrei Tarkovsky's Solaris, which was the Soviet answer to 2001, A Space Odyssey, which combines hardcore electronic sound with this. Eduard Artemyev's theme for Solaris, his version of Bach's choral prelude in F minor. For me, this is one of the most hauntingly strange sounds in science fiction cinema. The soundtrack that somehow conveys this idea of characters who are trapped on this spaceship, a long, long way from the Earth and yearning for it.
Yes, I think that's one of the functions of this Bach reworked on the film, is it's a kind of a nostalgia for Earth. But it's contrasted with Eduard Artemyev's score, which is, you know, a synthesized kind of score. And in fact, towards the end of the film, that Bach is sort of degraded or destroyed by that sort of synthesized score. So there's a kind of merging of those two worlds. And this relates very closely to the story of the central protagonist, who is having hallucinations and we don't know what's real. It's very much a dream kind of scape, the way this film is presented to us.
I wonder why fragments of old music like that, embedded in science fiction, are so powerful. Artemyev, when he was writing that, said he wanted to make the orchestra function like a giant synthesizer. Perhaps he is doing that. But what happens when we listen to something like that in that context? Why is it so powerful to hear something from the Earth in space?
Because I think, again, it's that same juxtaposition of familiar and unfamiliar. I think it's the same almost thing as those details of transport and food. I think it gives us something to latch onto and humanizes something which we can only imagine in other ways. So I think it's very much just about giving a bit of heart or a bit of humanity to a place that otherwise the music might be going to remove us from the humanity and our current relationship with it.
Or a sense of distance too, perhaps, distance from the Earth.
Yes, absolutely. And I think also, I mean, it's significant that it's Bach, you know, and there's a whole religious context to this music. There's a sense of transcendence through this music. And I think that's a really important part of it. I mean, you can think of other pieces of music, but that immediately that use of Bach sort of gets a deeper sort of layer there.
And actually Bach also is so, it's very clean music. I think if that had been a romantic piece of music, I think there'd be a different, if it had been quite manipulative or a big swelling chord, I think in a way it's more emotional because it's quite private music, it's quite contained, and I think it makes you come towards it rather than coming to you, which I think is quite a nice thing to do as a viewer and listener.
What you're describing there, that more romantic approach, that perhaps more manipulative approach, has become the orthodox with science fiction films, hasn't it? I suppose since John Williams's score for Star Wars in 1977, that big, grand, you know, bells and whistles, orchestral score. Star Wars is quite a nostalgic film, isn't it? It's rather like a 1930s Saturday morning serial made on a vast scale. Perhaps the music is backward-looking in the same way.
Yeah, I think absolutely Star Wars was backward-looking and unashamedly so. I mean, that's also a reaction to all of this electronic music of the 50s and 60s, and it's harking back to a 1930s classical Hollywood sound, absolutely. But I think that's because of the nature of that film. I mean, I don't think every film sort of after Star Wars has attempted to do it in that way. The influence of it is there in certain kinds of Hollywood films about space and about science fiction.
But there is a profound pleasure to be had, isn't there, from that big John Williams sound? I think we mustn't underestimate it.
No, absolutely. And, you know, Star Wars is a great film in so many ways. But as I say, I think it's a fairy tale, and that's what's enjoyable about it. The space part of it is only, a small part of what the narrative is really about, which is about this epic struggle between good and evil. You know, there's a war going on here, and there's even a princess and there's a knight. You know, it's a fairy tale in essence.
And that's where we have to open the pod bay doors and expel ourselves into the vastness of space, where the great domed mothership is waiting to pick us up. Before that happens, let's thank our guests, Anna Meredith and Miguel Mera. Live long and prosper.
Matthew Sweet presenting tonight's Proms Plus. The producer was Philippa Ritchie. And this is Petroc Trelawney with you on Radio 3, live at the Royal Albert Hall, celebrating film music. We'll be continuing those celebrations from mid-September here on Radio 3. And across the BBC, a major BBC focus on film music, including a three-part series presented by the composer Neil Brand, looking at the music that made the movies. Featuring directors ranging from Tarantino to Scorsese. That's on BBC Four. Big names from cinema introduced there. Favourite film music on Six Music. Bollywood on the BBC Asian Network. And on Radio 3, programmes including Composer of the Week, looking at British film music and Hollywood composers. Nightwaves, broadcasting from the British Film Institute. And Saturday Classics, featuring actors and directors and performers, including two icons of cinema, Terence Stamp and Sir Tom Courtney. Lots of concerts as well given by the BBC performing groups, including the BBC Concert Orchestra, celebrating some of the great film music scores from Britain, America, and around the world. The BBC's film music season starting in mid-September. Full details at the Radio 3 website. Well, tonight, our film music evening continues with music from both sides of the Atlantic. David Arnold, John Williams and Jerry Goldsmith ahead. And we bring you bang up to date with part of Michael Giacchino's score to the latest Star Trek epic, Into Darkness. We begin with a trio of great European composers whose work was made full use of by Stanley Kubrick in 2001, A Space Odyssey. Here lies one of those great Hollywood fables. Kubrick had previously worked with the composer Alex North on Spartacus in 1960. He was urged by MGM to book him again, and so he did. But Kubrick was becoming increasingly angry at the studio boss's interference in his projects. Though Alex North went ahead and scored the film, from the beginning, Kubrick never planned to use any of his music. He'd already worked out the classical selections that he wanted to use instead. Poor North, when he turned up at the New York premiere of the film in 1968, he only then discovered that not a bar of his work had been used. Neither Kubrick nor anyone else had even bothered to tell him. Ironically, George Ligeti, one of the chosen composers, was furious that his music had been used without his permission. Well, to add insult to injury, Alex North had even gone as far as writing a score that imitated the masterworks that Kubrick wanted to use, including the opening to Richard Strauss's Also Sprach Zarathustra, Ligeti's Atmospheres, and Johann Strauss II's Waltz by the Blue Danube, extracts from which we are going to hear as we begin part two of our film music prom. Keith Lockhart, principal conductor of the BBC Concert Orchestra, returns to the stage. Music from 2001, A Space Odyssey, filmed by Stanley Kubrick, starting with Richard Strauss's Also Sprach Zarathustra. Heart of Strauss's by the beautiful Blue Danube, before it Atmospheres by Judge Ligeti, and the opening of Also Sprach Zarathustra by Richard Strauss, as used by Stanley Kubrick in the soundtrack to 2001, A Space Odyssey. Keith Lockhart's going to speak now once again.
A selection of classical music that's associated with Stanley Kubrick's great space epic, 2001, A Space Odyssey, the film that really launched the craze for space fantasy films that, well, continues to the current day. Stanley Kubrick originally commissioned Alex North to write a complete original score for 2001, but when he put it against the film, well, he hated it. He got rid of it and went back to the music that he had used to dummy in as he was making the film, which was all original classical material, and thus forevermore, Blue Danube Waltz will be associated with astronauts in the void on a spacewalk, and the fanfare, that incredible stirring fanfare with which we began this portion of the program, will be always called the 2001 fanfare, as opposed to Also Sprach Zarathustra. The important question of the evening remains this. Are there any Trekkies out there? That's all? Live long and prosper. Well, then you will be very excited to know that tonight the concert orchestra presents the world premiere of the suite from Michael Giacchino's score to the new film Star Trek Into Darkness. Hope you enjoy it.
premiere of Michael Giacchino's suite from the new Star Trek movie Into Darkness. Did Gene Roddenberry know what he'd created when he launched Star Trek on NBC television in 1966? Well, next tonight, a Brit doing rather well in Hollywood, David Arnold, very much associated with the Doctor Who James Bond franchise. 5 James Bond films to his credit, but we're going to hear the end titles from his score to Independence Day. Keith Lockhart conducting the BBC Concert Orchestra here at the Proms. giant spacecraft flying towards the Earth, piloted by a mysterious alien species. The end titles to David Arnold's score to Independence Day, making full use of the percussion section, great red Japanese drum, and a huge bass drum, 6 foot tall. David Arnold from Luton, now conquering the world. Well, a great figure of Hollywood music legend next, Jerry Goldsmith, the end titles to 1979's Alien. Catherine Moore, principal trumpeter in the BBC Concert Orchestra. Jerry Goldsmith, closing titles to Alien. To finish our film music from John Williams. Keith Lockhart again.
Just one.
I guess they don't want me to talk. But I had the great pleasure 18 years ago of taking over the baton of the Boston Pops from John Williams, perhaps the greatest living composer of film music and one of the best known composers in the world. He remains the living example of a hard act to follow. We'd like to close this program with 4 selections from Star Wars. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Keith Lockhart conducting the BBC Concert Orchestra in a suite from John Williams' Star Wars. Ending with the main title. Before it, we heard the Cantina Band. Princess Leia's unashamedly romantic theme in the very best tradition of Hollywood love themes. Beautiful solo playing from Cynthia Fleming, leader of the orchestra. And we started with the Imperial March, dark parody of the American presidential march, Hail to the Chief. Here inaugurating Darth Vader as the Empire's president of evil. Well, John Williams, from a great line of Hollywood composers, he studied and admired Korngold, Newman, Rocha, composers who featured in the John Wilson Orchestra prom on Monday evening. That was broadcast on BBC4 television last night. You can watch it again at leisure for the next week via the BBC Proms website. Follow the links to watch and listen. Keith Lockhart back on the platform again. BBC Concert Orchestra on its feet. As he was saying before he started conducting the Star Wars suite, he has the pleasure and honour to know and worked with John Williams. He's back on the rostrum, which rather suggests a filmic encore. John Williams' Superman March from the 1978 film, directed by Richard Donner. George Lucas, who directed Star Wars, but I suppose Steven Spielberg, the film director, most associated with John Williams, a great creative partnership those two men have established together. And our own Superman here at the Royal Albert Hall, Keith Lockhart, principal conductor of the BBC Concert Orchestra since 2010. American, closely associated with the Boston Pops Orchestra, with whom he's conducted over 1,500 concerts, including 36 national tours and 70 television broadcasts. Returned the favour, as it were, earlier this year when he took the BBC Concert Orchestra on a hugely successful tour of the United States. He's back on the stage, big smiles as he bows, and his orchestra stand turns to applaud them now. Shakes the hand, now kisses Cynthia Fleming, orchestra leader. Well, don't forget, more film music still available to watch at the Prom's website. John Wilson and his Hollywood Prom from Monday night. This Prom will be on TV as part of our film music season right across the BBC. Two Proms tomorrow, the Big Prom's Bear Hunt with Michael Rosen and the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra at 4. And then the Orchestre Paris in the evening, Paavo Järvi conducting a programme that includes Arvo Pärt's Cantus in Memoriam Benjamin Britten and the Britten Violin Concerto played by Janine Janssen. That's tomorrow evening. If you fancy something different, Tristan and Isolde occupies the entire evening tomorrow night on BBC 4 television from this summer's Proms. Keith Lockhart returns once again to the stage. Brass section standing, I think he's going to work his way. The percussion section now stretched dramatically along the back of the Royal Albert Hall stage. That Japanese drum that got to play just four notes, but goodness, they were well worth hearing. And with that, as the entire orchestra stands, our night of cinema magic reaches its conclusion. From the Royal Albert Hall, good night. Back to David Cornett at Broadcasting House.
Thank you, Petrock. That was Petrock Trelawney. And as Petrock hinted, well, and said, in fact, every Prom is available for 7 days via the Radio 3 website. And also, he mentioned our cinema, Sound of Cinema season coming up. The titles roll on BBC 4 television on the 12th of September. And here on Radio 3 In Tune, we'll be laying out the plot on the 13th of September. The story develops then over 3 weeks, with the closing credits on the 4th of October. So that's our Sound of Cinema season coming to a radio and television near you, starting in 2 weeks' time.
This weekend, Paris comes to the BBC Proms. Paavo Järvi conducts the Orchestre de Paris in Arvo Pärt's Cantus in Memory of Benjamin Britten. And Janine Janssen is the soloist in Britten's Meditative Violin Concerto. Plus two French showpieces in the second half, Berlioz's overture Le Corsaire and Saint-Saëns' Organ Symphony. From Estonian introspection to Gallic flamboyance, join Martin Handley at the Proms tomorrow evening at 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
Talking, as we were earlier, about catching up with Proms on the internet, the pianist Imogen Cooper gave a live performance in the In Tune studio yesterday ahead of her Proms appearance next week, when she'll be playing with Paul Lewis a concert of Schubert's works. Also during In Tune, a live performance by the soprano Anna Maria Martinez and an interview with the violinist Isabel Faust and the harpsichordist Christian Bezuidenhout. So you can catch up with that on the Radio 3 website or on the BBC iPlayer radio app. And since I did mention Imogen Cooper's concert next week, it's the late Prom on Thursday night at 10:15. Well, coming up next this evening is Here and Now. That's scheduled for 10:30. I hope you'll stay with me for the next 40 minutes, because I thought what we might hear is part of, nearly all of, but not quite all of, La Boutique Fantasque. Music by Rossini, piano music originally, arranged by Respighi. And it's played on this particular recording by the Toronto Symphony, conducted by Andrew Davis. Boutique Fantasque by Rossini, orchestrated by Respighi and played by the Toronto Symphony, conducted by Andrew Davis. We, in fact, have time for one more. In the same vein, actually, this is from Bizet's Jeux d'enfants, the duo Petit Mari, Petite Femme.
Thank you.
Little Husband, Little Wife from Bizet's Jeu d'Enfant, played by the Toronto Symphony, conducted by Andrew Davis. This is BBC Radio 3, Now, Here and Now, presented by Sarah Moore-Peach.
20th century greats on the programme tonight. Olivier Messiaen, Jonathan Harvey, Yanis Anarkis and Karlheinz Stockhausen. The French pianist Pierre-Laurent Aimard has just been at the Edinburgh International Festival in residence at the Hub, and the centrepiece of tonight's programme is a late-night concert he gave there less than a fortnight ago, bringing together two important works from the 20th century, Stockhausen's Contacta for piano and electronics, and the second book of Messiaen's Catalogue d'Oiseaux, Catalogue of the Birds.
On one side, we have somebody who turns completely into the direction of new technologies, and on the other side, somebody who turns in the direction of nature. Both of them trying to renew, really, a history of music that, at the moment of Second World War, of course, has encountered a kind of collapse.
Pierre-Laurent Aimard, and we're going to hear him playing Messiaen and his pupil Stockhausen in a bit. Earlier in the month, you might have heard Robert Warby in conversation with Paul Griffiths talking about Stockhausen's early piano pieces as performed by Nicholas Hodges at the BBC's Stockhausen Total Immersion Weekend back in 2009. Well, here's another of those pieces, the fifth, as a little prelude to what's to come in tonight's Here and Now.
Recorded back in 2009 in a total immersion weekend into the music of Stockhausen. That was the pianist Nicholas Hodges playing Stockhausen's early piano piece number 5. And that acts as a little prelude to Stockhausen's major work for piano and electronics, Kontakte, that we're about to hear. Kontakte came out of Stockhausen's time in the Westdeutsche Rundfunk studios in Cologne, following on from his 1956 electronic masterpiece Gesang der Jünglinge. Kontakte is a major half-hour work, which he finished in 1960. It started off as a purely electronic piece, but he then reworked it for electronics and live piano and percussion. The performance we're going to hear from the Edinburgh International Festival was given by Pierre-Laurent Aymar. Joining him on electronics was the Italian Marco Stroppa, who describes for us what's going on stage.
In the center of the stage, quite in front, two large round percussion instruments, a large tam and a large gong. They are performed by the players who move from their position to the scene in some moments of the piece, and of course climaxes and very dramatic moments. On the left you have a grand piano with some percussions around it, and on the right you have a big percussion set with a lot of instruments and a lot of microphones. Me, I am in the center of the hall because I'm responsible for the acoustic balance of all the instruments. Has microphones, and the electronics, of course, coming out only from four loudspeakers around the four corners of the hall, and I'm sort of conductor of everything because I'm trying to balance all the instruments so that they merge together. Because the idea of the piece, as the title says, contacts, right, is exactly to find a contact between acoustic instruments and purely electronic sounds, that is, sounds that were not recorded beforehand and then processed by some electronic means, but really generated by electronic instruments in the 1950s, when electronics was extremely rudimentary and the instruments were very large for very little sound. What Stockhausen managed to do and how he coped with the challenge of getting musical sounds out of this is absolutely prodigious.
Marco Stroppa, who performed Stockhausen's Kontakte with Pierre-Laurent Aymar and the percussionist Samuel Favre in Edinburgh just a couple of weeks ago. We're going to hear that now, after a word from Stockhausen himself.
Not only me, but also the public thought that this music is from today, even from tomorrow. It's so fresh. I'm very happy that Kontakte is so new still, and will be.